is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Tuesday edition of the program coming up. We got our buddy Ryan Roland-Smith joining us at the bottom of the hour. Talk some Mariners with him. John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock. Hit the NFL with him, and it's Tuesday, which means 5 o'clock features the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley with us, so stay tuned for Radio Gold. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. How was your vacation, Bob?
I was good, man. Went over to Whidbey Island. Got off the grid, as some like to say, groomer. Got out there for a while, and then it was pretty cool. I'd never been out there, so it's kind of a quiet, you know, quaint place to hang out.
Wait a minute. You grew up in Kirkland. You went to Lake Washington High School, and you'd never been to Whidbey Island.
No,
really?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
I've never been there. I've been to Vashon. I've been to, you know, a couple of the other. I couldn't tell you. You know, a lot I went as a little kid. So I couldn't. If I'd been there, I don't remember it. How about that?
So where'd you go?
Jim, I grew up in Reno, and we would never go to the casinos.
Well, that one's even harder for Jim to relate to, not going to casinos.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, did you go to Langley, Oak Harbor?
Yeah,
We
went to Langley. We chocolate shop out there, had lunch. We stayed at the Captain Whidbey Inn, I think is what it was called.
Oh, nice.
Like a hotel built in 1907. So it was very, very, a lot of character to it. Very interesting out there. So, yeah, it was good, man. Did you guys, did you miss me?
Oh, terribly. Terribly.
Yeah. I know Dave did.
There was a few moments that were a little bit tense, but yeah, we got through it.
Well, Dave did a great job driving the show, but yes, you were missed, Bob. We're glad to have you back.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I missed you guys too. Well, you know, the Mariners, there were some good and some bad. Again, we'll cover that with Ryan Roland-Smith. But Pete Carroll was speaking with the media here, and I know you guys hit some of what he had to say yesterday. But linebacker's a spot that's really interesting because it feels, at least now, you know, injuries are always the caveat, but they seem extremely deep there, that they've got a lot of potential options, whether you're talking about Barton and Burkervin from the year's previous draft. You got Brooks coming in this year. Of course, you still got Wagner, and you still have, KJ and Shaquem, I guess, is a linebacker. I'm not really sure how they plan on using him, but Pete Carroll talking about all this, kind of saying the same thing. We've got a ton of flexibility at linebacker, and you could see them all play at the same time.
You know, we have tremendous flexibility in our guys. Our guys have been here for a long time in our program. With Bruce coming back and KJ and Bobby, it's a fantastic group of guys. We've got a lot of options in plan here to weigh up, but we got to see how it goes. And that's why this goes back to competition, and we'll see how it all plays itself out. KJ's been a fantastic player, might have had his best year for us last year. Bobby's at the top of his game, and we're thrilled to have Bruce back. But that doesn't mean, you know, that all those guys don't play at the same time, you know, and all four of those guys are on the field at the same time. There's options for how we can do that we've worked out, and the competition will settle it. I'm not concerned about it at all. The competition will tell us what we need to do here, and because the options are all there for us.
So, competition, preaching that. I did like hearing him say, Dave, and I know you've been on this and I've been on this as well, that KJ, as much as everybody talks about, man, you could save this amount of money if you cut him and he's getting older and he's lost a step. I mean, he kind of reiterated what I feel like most people saw is he had a really, really good year last year. I don't know if it was his best. Pete's, you know, prone to hyperbole, but KJ was really good last year.
It might have been his best. Three interceptions, man. I mean, and I know that's been something that, you know, KJ has always talked about, is getting those interceptions, and he hasn't had a lot. But, he also played with a lot of ferocity last year. I mean, I thought, you know, I was complaining about they need a hammer out there, and he was the hammer, I thought. I thought he did a really good job. But, yeah, KJ's only had one interception, once in 2012, once in 2017. So to get three, it was really good. It's a really It's a tough one. And I like the fact that Pete mentioned KJ off the top there, saying, you know, how good he played and how what a great leader he is and everything. Because, but, you know, he said getting all four of them on the field. I was going, wait, which four was he talking about? Because he didn't mention Cody Barton, but I think he mentioned Brooks, and I guess he was maybe talking about Bruce Irvin. And that would be the case if, you know, they were able to have him rushing off the edge. But they have him listed as a linebacker. And so for that reason, you know, I think there's going to be a couple of guys that are cut that, you know, and good special team players too. I mean, Ben Burkervin and Shaquem Griffin, those guys are demons on special teams. So it's tough at linebacker. There's no rookie free agents at linebacker. It's, you know, it's Cody, it's Jordan Brooks, Ben Burkervin, Shaquem Griffin, Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner, and KJ Wright. So it's really probably going to be one of the more interesting battles out there. You know, I earlier today, like we were talking about some of these other things. We've talked a lot about Marquise Blair. I heard on the morning show they were talking about Trey Flowers and whether he can have a bounce back year, which I thought was kind of an interesting way to put it. I didn't hear it. I just saw the recap. But, like, man, that guy had a good season last year. 2 sacks, 3 interceptions, a bunch of tackles, forced fumble. So but as much as there's going to be drama in all those positions, where you're probably the most sound is linebacker, but it's also going to be interesting to see who they keep, and especially seeing that linebackers are usually, you know, the core of your special team unit.
Well, that's the thing, Dave. You think Ben Burkervin and Shaquem Griffin, you think they're facing an uphill battle to make the team this year?
Very much so. Yeah, I really do. And, you know, Shaquem actually showed his worth at the end as far as rushing the passer. You know, he got a sack in the playoff game, and he put some pressure, on Kyler Murray. So they finally started using him that way. So, you know, I guess that puts, in my mind anyway, Burkervin probably the first one cut if they do make cuts at linebacker. So they have 7 of them, which is a reasonable number. But you know, if they're going to count Bruce Irvin and have him, you know, sometimes play the Sam, you know, the strong side linebacker, then, you know, maybe they're allowed, you know, they're able to cut somebody else because of the versatility from him.
It feels like maybe they would keep would they keep one of those two, or do you think they're both probably facing their demise? Talking about Griffin, yeah, and talking about Ben Burkervin, because it feels like there's certainly, you know, listen, we've talked about guys making a roster based on what they do on special teams. And it feels like we've seen both of those guys have some really bright spots in special team situations. And then Shaquem a little bit in rushing the passers you just talked about. Do you think that's enough for either one of them to maintain a roster spot?
Well, yeah, I think Shaquem, you know, probably, I think Burkervin's probably the odd man out here. You know, and he had a couple penalties, you know, but, you know, he made some plays too. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, because also, you know, you also have to account for the fact that when you come back in your second year, this kid is incredibly smart. Ben Burkervin is a really smart football player. And so, you know, that's, what did Yogi Berra say? 90% of the game is half mental or something like that. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, that really counts for something. And so the jump that he takes. So I guess, you know, I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, he's definitely cut. He's, you know, on the list there. But again, it's a tough one, because and even if you do cut him, you know, that leaves only 6, you know, 6 linebackers. And you mentioned the special teams, and, you know, you got to imagine that they're going to be a huge part of that.
All right. In this one, Pete talks specifically about the rookie Jordan Brooks, basically just saying the guy can play anywhere on the field, but his immediate best fit would probably be at the will.
Well, I think the spot that makes sense to us at this point, he could play either outside. He could play all 3 spots at linebacker. He's physically capable, and I've seen enough film of him. I mean, there's a lot of film of him playing all different spots. So I know in his background, any college guy that came to us, you know, you would love to see what we've seen in him. He started for 4 years and he's had thousands of snaps. So the flexibility is there. I think his clearest path would be, and the most obvious path would be at the Will backer spot. We'll see how that goes. We'll start him there and then see how fast he can grasp it and how soon he can become comfortable, and we'll see.
Jim, I know you wanted to weigh in on that, saying, you know, Will is the spot that he sees he's going to have his best chance. That's where his strength currently is, but it can play anywhere. And obviously you've got a very, very prominent individual occupying that spot right now.
Well, that's the thing, Dave. I wanted to ask you with KJ Wright. That's his position. And I'm just curious what you think KJ thought when he heard Pete say that. Like, hey, man, you just talked about what a great year I had last year. Now you're bringing the rookie over here. I understand that if they feel like Jordan Brooks, that's his best position, go for it. But do you think it ends up meaning that they share the job there at that position? Or do you think KJ is going to shift over to the strong side?
You know, he can do that. He definitely could. And that's, you know, like I said, that's where Cody Barton can play, and so can, you know, Bruce Irvin. But, yeah, I mean, you back a guy into a corner like KJ, he's going to come out swinging. And, you know, he's going to fight you for that job. But, yeah, it makes the most sense to put Brooks there. I played in the Will in a 4-3, and it was my best year. I really enjoyed him on the backside. It's Pete's defense is different, but you know, like plays away, you can just run. A lot of times you're not accounted for in the blocking scheme. And then, you know, just, you get a lot of freedom to just run around, make plays. You know, typically the middle linebacker makes all the calls and the checks and things like that. So yeah, it was fun. I really enjoyed playing in that position. And that's something that you could probably throw Brooks. I mentioned this earlier in an email or at some point along the line that, you know, with Brooks, if you get him in some situations where it's just like put him in and push play, you know, go run to the quarterback, run to the ball, don't have a lot of responsibilities, you know, man-to-man coverage, things like that. You can use him and, you know, that way. Because remember when they put Shaquem Griffin in, it was the first game of the year in 2018 against Denver. I can't remember what the situation was. KJ was hurt or something, but yeah, I mean, he was really lost, and that's, you know, to be expected. And Ben Burkervin kind of looked like that a couple of times last year when he got in that Carolina game, same thing with Cody Barton. So you want to put him in situations where less thinking and just, you know, hit the gas, play 100%. You know, go 100 miles an hour, and that's probably the best position for him to play. But yeah, it does coincide with KJ and where he plays. So it's, you know, maybe he gets, he's a first round draft choice though. You know, I mean, I would think that you give him every opportunity that you can to get on the field. And if he starts to show something, then, you know, he might end up playing that position. And then, like you said, maybe you could move KJ over there to the other side. But then that also brings into play Cody Barton. And that's another guy I really like. So, yeah, it's going to be a really tough decision. And again, I said in my email, like, I feel like it's almost like sacrilegious to even speculate that KJ is going to get traded or cut or anything like that. He's just been such a huge part of this team. And probably last year, I thought more a part of this defense and important to this defense than he's ever been.
Hey, Dave, quickly before we move on to a couple other thoughts from Pete talking about Rashad Penny and Will Dissly, we get these texts every so often. Could you, in a very concise, simple way, explain the difference between a Will, a Sam, a Mike? And you just touched on some of the responsibilities there, but just in a very simple way for the layman that don't know what distinguishes those.
Sure. Yeah, Sam is the strong side linebacker. We used to call it stud. But, you know, you're usually lined up over the tight end. And, you know, I remember some of those fly sweep plays that Cody Barton kind of had trouble with. He's lined up on the tight end. The tight end was blocking him and getting him turned a little bit. So usually, you know, you're lined up kind of up on the line of scrimmage. Not always, but, you know, and you're up on the tight end. The middle linebacker, the Mike, is right in the middle, you know, usually right over the center. And then the Will is on the backside, so usually the weak side linebacker who, you know, is mostly just dropping into zones and, you know, playing the weak side of the formation. And a lot of times, you know, when teams line up with a tight end, you know, away, they want to run that way. So you're the backside sort of pursuit guy. So just in a nutshell, yeah, that's just basically what you're seeing. And KJ is usually like stacked behind the defensive end. You know, and Bobby's usually right over the center, and then the Sam would be right over the tight end to make it really simple.
All right, good deal. Pete talked about a couple of other players there. As I said, Rashad Penny coming back from a severe knee injury, says he's going to arrive later this week. No need to put the rush on him.
He's coming in on Thursday. We didn't think we needed to rush him in because he's still, you know, rehabbing and coming back. He'll come in Thursday for Friday, and he'll start his process of reconnecting with us on Friday. We just thought it would be better. He missed a week in transition that we didn't want to because he would have had to sit around the days right here, right now. We'd like to go ahead and hopefully we made a good decision there. We're anxious to get him back. He's working out really hard. The reports are really strong that he's doing well. But we have not had him in our building for a while now, so this will be our first chance.
Be interesting to see what kind of condition he's in, what he is really capable. I mean, we see these videos of guys, you know, doing different drills and things, but often they're not planting and cutting the way they otherwise would, especially with a knee injury. So I feel like some of those videos that they put out can be deceiving in terms of how close they are to play, to being play game time ready is what I'm trying to say. I don't know what your takeaway was from the video we saw of Rashad, and they'll get their first look at him in person, but I don't really know what to expect from him this season.
Yeah, I guess from my eye, I was like, I don't know that he's quite ready yet. There was just something, kind of a little hitch and a little bit of favoring, you know, when he was going through and doing the ladder drill where, you know, you go 2 feet in the hole and then 2 feet out and 2 feet in. And, you know, he was doing all that stuff. I mean, he looked good, definitely looked good, looked like he was in good shape and everything. But, you know, I always talk about how when you're out there and your eyes take you where you're going, rather than, you know, you go into a drill like that, you know where your feet are going to go. But when you get out on a field, your eyeballs take you, you know, different places and you're reacting. And I'm not sure he was quite there yet, if just from what I looked at, you know, as far as that whole training video goes. But it was just a stupid training video. So,
right.
I mean, you never know. But yeah, I mean, it looked like he was coming along really good. But it's totally different when you get back out there. And a big part of it is trusting, you know, your steps and everything, because, you know, when you're not injured, you know, you just go wherever your eyeballs take you. But man, it's really tough to get that trust and that faith back in, you know, especially if you have a knee injury.
Well, and they really don't need to rush him back as much as, boy, he started showing more and more why they drafted him in the first round last year when he had that injury. But if he's out for six games, you got Carlos Hyde in the offseason, rushed for over 1,000 yards with Houston last year. So you're good to go there with Carson and Carlos Hyde. And I wonder when Penny comes back, it's probably going to be hard for him to get snaps early on, especially if Carlos Hyde's as successful as he was last year.
And we'll get to some of your texts later on. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Dave, that just opened up Pandora's box there. Now it's, please explain what a Leo is. Do Sam and Will flip if the tight end motions to the other side? What are the Sam and Will assignments against 12 personnel? Asking for a friend. So it just opened up the box for everybody's questions on that. Maybe we can get to some of those coming up in just a bit, but I want to play one more from Pete here before we take two. Will Dissly, a guy that, again, Dave, you're very high on, everybody very high on. Unfortunately, he's had severe injuries since he's been here. He's played a handful of games and looked awesome. But some good news in terms of his recovery?
He spent 9 months working out on a rigid, you know, real rigid schedule. He didn't miss 1 minute of one day in 9 straight months. They said they'd never seen anybody do that before. And the benefits of it is that he comes in and passes his physical. So we're thrilled about Will's process. But then again, because of the way he's been, I'm not surprised that somebody would say that he's been the hardest worker and the most diligent, grittiest guy that they've ever seen come through the program. So that means that we'll still take care of Will as we start camp, but yet he did pass his physical. We'll look after him and make sure that we don't come along too fast.
So great news. They'll err on the side of caution, work him in slowly, but he's not on the PUP list, which is awesome news.
Yeah. Oh, man. I just, what an uphill battle for him. I mean, can you imagine just going and, you know, blowing your knee out and then getting all the way back and then you blow out your Achilles tendon? I mean, just heartbreaking. I mean, in the emotional part of it. But, man, I was talking to him down on the sidelines last year, you know, after his surgery, and he was like, yeah, well, just do it again, you know, no big deal. I mean, he's a very laid back guy. He's one of the few guys, by the way, that, like, we were walking to an interview and he was peppering me with questions. He's kind of a question man, like,
hey,
Bob Stelton.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Well, I love that. I love that. I mean, you don't often get players, you know, that will ask you questions, you know, they're always just answering. And so anyway, I just think he has, I guess the reason I'm telling that story is I feel like he has the mental side of it, the emotional side of it down, that it's not going to be a problem for him. And boy, he came back from that knee injury really well. I mean, he looked great up until he blew out his Achilles.
Yeah, we'll have to see with him. I'm curious coming off two injuries like that. But down-to-earth kid from Montana, I just love Will Dissly. I love him ever since he sang the Husky Fight song when I asked him to, and he did it right on cue.
Yeah.
And he did a great job with it. But Dissly's on this breakout list this year that ESPN has, top 25 list of players who could have breakout years. He's number 20 on the list. And you can see why based on what he did last year and just a short sample size, having four touchdowns and 23 catches for 262 yards. And at the time, he led all tight ends. Think about all the tight ends in the NFL. No one had more touchdowns than Will Dissly at that point in the season. So you can see why so many people are optimistic about what he could bring to the Seahawks this year.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two. Washington State head football coach Nick Rolovich released a statement today saying that his conversation with wide receiver Cassidy Woods happened before the Pac-12 players released their letter of concerns. Rolovich said, in part, "I regret that my words cautioning Cassidy have become construed as opposition. I'm proud of our players and all the Pac-12 student athletes for using their platform, especially for matters they are passionate about."
Yeah, I'm sure you guys hit on this yesterday, and Jim, I'll start with you. When I first read it, I was like, that's a bad look. It didn't, reading the transcription of the conversation between him and Cassidy, it didn't play well. I'm glad he apologized. I don't know if you believe he's sincere or not, but yeah, hopefully they can get past this, because I'm looking forward to the kind of coach he seems to be, but I thought that was a big misstep on his part.
Really? Okay, yeah, yeah. I think it might have been a misstep. I wouldn't call it a big misstep, but so it sounds like you're skeptical about the apology.
A little bit.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. No, I'm not at all. I can see why he was laying it out the way he did, and he's not against the We Are United hashtag, the group, the movement that they have, the Pac-12 players. But I think he wanted to just explain to him, to Cassidy Woods, he wanted it to be clear that it's a different situation if you opt out from COVID or if you opt out for other reasons, you might not have your scholarship. And he's had players that came out and support Rolovich today. There was Jihad Woods on Twitter who said, you know, people are trying to force a negative narrative on Rolo. It's really wild to me. To the up-and-coming recruiting class, don't listen to the media or anyone outside of this team. They don't know bleep. Skylar Thomas, a defensive back, he also supported Nick Rolovich. So I'm just going to say I think it was blown out of proportion, although I can see why you think the way you do, Bob, and there's been others, Bomani Jones, that have really come out harshly on Nick Rolovich. But I think in this instance, the Cougar coach, I take his apology for what it's worth. I thought it was sincere.
The M's lost 11-1 to the A's last night. Things got ugly after Justice Sheffield left, with the M's bullpen giving up 7 runs. Brian Shaw in particular had a rough night, allowing 5 runs on 4 hits and walking 2.
Yeah, he's not been good, and he's not alone in there. Groats has not been good, and I think he's been optioned to the to whatever they're calling it. You're not going to the minor leagues, but he's off-site now. It's been wildly uneven in the bullpen, and same with the rotation. Even though you got a string of nice starts, Justice Sheffield couldn't really get out of trouble, didn't get a lot of help, 11-1. I mean, this is what we're going to see with this team. Very young, very uneven, and a lot, especially when it comes to the bullpen. Half these guys you hadn't heard of coming into this season, and you're seeing why.
Boy, I sure like the way Sheffield started off, though.
Started great.
Turned south, but he just looked so confident and just command and throwing everything that he wanted to. And you could see some of the hitters were out there shaking their head like, wow, that was a good pitch. But, you know, hopefully, the next time out, and that's what I'm looking for. I want to see how he bounces back from this, Sheffield. But the other bummer was Kyle Lewis, you know, snapped his 10-game streak there of getting a hit. But he still leads the league in hits with 17.
All right, there you go. Coming up, Ryan Roland-Smith will join us. We'll talk more Mariners with him, get his take on the bullpen and his conversation with tonight's starting pitcher, Justin Dunn. Justin Dunn on his Top Step podcast. So we'll cover all of that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Talking Mariner baseball with our buddy, our favorite Bogan, Ryan Roland-Smith. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. It's, you know, the Mariners took a beating last night, and I would imagine that'll be part of what the season is about, young guys learning, trying to figure out who can throw, who can't in that bullpen. But are you surprised by the unevenness of the bullpen? I know it's really early in terms of number of games so far, but in terms of nailing down some roles for these guys in the bullpen, that's going to be pretty tough because it's been wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to have, you know, those roles. And yeah, from Scott Service's point of view, I was thinking about this last night. Well, you look at your bullpen, you say, okay, what do I know about these guys? You know, there's really no veteran presence, or if there is veteran presence, they're either trying to resurrect their career or they're trying to still prove themselves. So it's a situation where you really cannot sort of pinpoint, okay, you get this role, you get that role. You know, and on the flip side, you look at the Oakland A's. You know, up and down that bullpen, whether they're putting up good numbers or not, you have guys that you have a track record and you know exactly what they're made of. So it's a tough one. A lot of young guys just trying to make that name for themselves, emerge. I just think if I'm in that situation, if I'm a young pitcher in that situation, I'm looking around. You cannot get caught up in, and we're being a product of your environment. Basically, if your bullpen buddy goes out, gives it up, and comes back in the next day in the locker room and says, oh, well, I'm working on something, you get caught up in that. If I'm in that bullpen, I have to try and emerge and be the dude. Because they're about to cut down a couple of roster spots here, then a couple more, and then you've got 2021. And you just don't want to be on that ship of guys who are just on the DFA block, see you later, when all these new guys come up. So someone has to step up right now, emerge, and not just mark this down as being, well, it's a rebuild year, I'm working on stuff. No, go out and prove yourself. Do something good and put up some good numbers.
Hey Ryan, I want to get your take on your trained eye as a former pitcher. I was so impressed by Sheffield last night, to up to a certain point, of course. But man, in the third, especially where he got Piscotty, Murphy, Laureano. I mean, he looked like he looked different. He looked like he had a lot of command and a lot of purpose. What did you see from him?
He looked good and sticking that chest out and had that presence. And all of a sudden, he just flicked the switch. I think you go back to the game against the Angels, and, you know, he's amped up. He's trying to do just a little too much. And you're talking about that fastball, first of all. Slider looked great. But let's talk about the fastball. He threw a four-seam fastball, and he changed the grip, went to a two-seam fastball because the role of that pitch changed over the offseason. This is something they said, look, you have a low spin rate. You're going to be below the barrel. The role of that fastball now is to induce weak contact and get ground balls, as opposed to trying to blow a four-seam fastball, which wasn't getting any swings and misses. So he goes into this season, and he's trying to do just a little too much against the Angels. He figured that out for this game against the A's. All of a sudden, he walks Chris Davis. He's frustrated. He was 0-2 count, goes to 3-2, battles, and then loses him. And then he's anchoring on that at-bat, and all of a sudden, he's trying to do just a little too much again. And that's that two-seam fastball, and he's trying to do a little too much. He doesn't get that extension. He doesn't get that good pronation on the wrist over the ball and get that thing to go to the bottom of the strike zone. It stays middle, and then it gets crushed. And then really, the slider, that's a situation where you can hang off that nasty slider, as good as it was, because you can sit on a fastball middle. And that's exactly what went down for Justice Sheffield. A situation with literally a five-minute block of last night that completely derailed him. And this is something, again, look, I know he's young, but it's one of those things that you have to give those extra seconds before each pitch. And just try and do a little bit less on that pitch. Trust it. Get that extension. Trust that this contact is going to be weak because I'm going to attack. I'm going to pitch the contact. Get the weak contact. Get you a ground ball. Easier said than done, but that's last night watching Justice. There were so many good things to take away from last night, and hopefully he took away all the good. But, man, it's amazing what 5 minutes does to your night.
I'll tell you, Ryan, I thought you say Kikuchi. I thought his performance was the best of the four-game series, and that's saying a lot because Taijuan Walker was so good himself Friday night with one hit, giving up one hit in seven innings. But Kikuchi throwing 97, being aggressive, what'd you see from him?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a situation where he didn't, you know, push the panic button or, you know, start to lose trust. He just went right after guys. Everything was hard, though. The one thing, the change-up, he saw him, you know, a few more change-ups. He's throwing that little cutter slider, whatever he wants to call it. Acts more like a cut fastball. And then he's backing up with 97 up in the strike zone. The two things, though, I still want to see this to make it complete where he can fall back, where he doesn't have to be perfect, is drop in that breaking ball. You've got to see that speed differential from him. Otherwise, it's going to be back and forth in the results. And the other thing is he has to learn how to pitch up in the strike zone. He's just a little inconsistent when he tries to go middle up. And we saw it flashes of it last year where it was really good. And I feel like with that fastball, the way it just takes off and explodes out of his hands, if he's up in the strike zone, he trusts it that he can go up there and get swings and misses, he's going to be good. And then the other part of that, obviously, like I said, is that breaking ball. Didn't see a whole lot of that, but, man, he looked good. He just looked confident, and he looked really aggressive. Like, basically, hey, I throw 97, you ain't going to hit it. He had that kind of attitude. So that was fun to see.
Ryan, it's you got to really, you know, two polar opposites happening with the offense. The really good news is Kyle Lewis just looks like a stud. His consecutive hit games with a hit streak ended, but, I mean, you know, hitting .386 right now, 17 hits on the season, three home runs. I mean, he's been spectacular. Kyle Seager getting off to a quick start. We're so used to seeing him just sort of scuffle his way through the first couple of months, but he's hitting .316 right now. J.P. Crawford looks great both out in the field and at the plate. Dylan Moore and Tim Lopes chipping in. But then you go to the other side and you go, all right, Evan White, young guy who's never had an at-bat above double-A, feels like he's a bit overmatched. Defensively, he looks like a stud. But at the plate, he looks like he's a little overmatched. Daniel Vogelback, Jose Marmolejos, Malik Smith just seem kind of lost up there.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, I think Evan White, we saw it last at bat against Trevino, just straight fastball, middle in, and just overmatched. And does he have the ability to hit that pitch? Absolutely. But it's just, I think that's just more of a mindset that on the on-deck circle, having that belief and not having that pressure on yourself when you're a young player because everyone expects so much. And even if you do well, people expect you to keep it up. It's not a situation where the league has said, oh, we know how to pitch this guy. That's more him. That's him. That's Evan White versus Evan White in his head. I really think so. I think, you know, with Kyle Lewis, when you watch his at-bats, everything just, there's just a comfort factor there, man. Letting that ball travel and just have the ease of his swing. Even the pitches he takes, he just looks in complete control of everything he's doing. But I think, you know, when you talk about Evan White, man, it's not a situation where you have to tear it up as soon as you get up. But again, you would like just to see just a little bit of, you know, basically control over a 96-mile-per-hour fastball, not being overmatched, because we're seeing a ton of that lately. And if that keeps up, you know, any longer, well, it's going to be tough to watch. And Daniel Vogelback, same thing. Look, he went and got off to such a good start last year. And I said this to you guys last year. Last week, excuse me. One thing that you want to hope, whether it be Shed Long, Evan White, even Daniel Vogelback, you can't treat these guys, especially the young guys coming out of double A. You can't be a situation, I think the Mariners hopefully doing a good job at this, but you can't tell them how amazing they are all the time and say, look, oh, you're great. Because you get up there and you have this false sense of comfort. You have to go up there, even if you're a young player, you have to earn every single hit that you get. And you want to have that hunger. And you want to have that, I have to prove everyone wrong, chip on your shoulder sometimes. And you just don't want to make sure these guys, these first couple months of their career, they have that and they continue to prove themselves. Because, again, let's be honest, man, they're coming out of double A. They haven't done anything in the major leagues yet, even though we talk about him in such a high regard. So I think there still has to be that element of either getting your balls blown off, getting overmatched by a 96-mile-per-hour fastball, and getting told that, you know, hey, man, you got to work for this. So if there's enough of that, they're going to be okay. But you just want to make sure that they're still trying to earn those hits.
Ryan Roland-Smith with us every single week. We always appreciate it, man. And by the way, go check out his latest edition of his podcast, Top Step Podcast. He's got tonight's starting pitcher, Justin Dunn, as his guest. So check that out. Okay. Ryan, we appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
There you go. Talking M's with Ryan Roland-Smith. Coming up, Pete Carroll sounded very excited when talking about how the Seahawks can utilize DK Metcalf this season. We'll let you hear what he had to say on why DK will be even better this year. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you have a radio in your home. If you've got a smart speaker, Google, Alexa, whatever you've got, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. And it becomes a radio right there. We got the Professor John Clayton coming up at the top of the hour, so we'll talk some football with him. You guys can text in any questions you've got for John to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Meanwhile, a couple more thoughts from Pete Carroll, where he was talking about DK Metcalf, who everybody's excited about. I mean, what, 900 yards receiving last year? He just looked like the physical stud that you thought he could be. Questions about his durability was not a problem last year. And Pete Carroll, very optimistic, says he's going to be even better this year.
What a great kid, man. I'm so fired up for him. He had so much to prove in his first year that because he's a great competitor, and he had a chip on his shoulder that was huge, and he wanted to prove that he belonged and that he could be a star. And he did everything he could in his first year. Smart, bright, tough, consistent, applied himself, I mean, made the plays, you know, and overcame the disappointments of the plays that he couldn't make at times that are well within his range. He's going to be better this year. He had an incredible offseason.
If anybody knows what it's like to have a chip on their shoulder, by God, it's Jim Moore. I mean, you don't have that kind of output, that kind of career without a true chip on your shoulder, right, Jim?
No, you're exactly right about that, Bob. I've been doubted my entire life, and so I bring it a little extra every single day when I come here to work, and this morning was no different. I was show prepping like a fiend, I'm telling you.
Because you're angry.
You think the doubting is sometimes well-founded?
Maybe occasionally, but you know, a better teammate wouldn't have said that, Dave.
Oh,
that
boy.
Was me. That was me swinging at Jim's ankles.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay. Yeah.
See, Bob's back, and Dave can take shots at me again. You know, he needed me the 2 days you were gone.
Okay, he had to keep you on his side. I got you.
Jim and I are very sweet to each other when you're gone, Bob, because he knows that all I have to do is say, "Oh, do you want to lead the show, Jim?" So yeah, we're very nice to each other. Very nice.
I love it.
But DK Metcalf, guys, I just watched him. I forgot about this. He ran a 4.33 40 at the combine. Like when you think about DK Metcalf, we don't really talk about like his speed burning ability, right? It's usually you talk about Lockett, but this guy is an unbelievable. He's 6'4", 230 pounds. But, you know, usually these guys don't pan out. Usually the body beautiful guys, you know, they look great. Like, you want them getting off the bus first. But, you know, that sometimes they can't play. This kid can play, man. And I'm with Pete. Like, I think that he was, you know, I'd say next to – well, I thought he was a better rookie than Tyler Lockett was his first year. And that's saying a lot because Tyler was great, just his film study, everything, the way he behaved, the way he handled it. All of that, but DK Metcalf was such a pro last year. I'm with Pete, man. I expect him. I don't see any sophomore slump or anything like that. I think you're going to see this kid just continue to become that superstar that, you know, that Russell Wilson is always talking about. You know, we need to get superstars in here. You got one, man. This kid in the second round.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats from Ole Miss because I'm trying to think back as to why he dropped to the bottom of the second round. And the only thing I can come up with was his durability at Ole Miss because he only played 21 games in 3 years. And so, but you look at him now and you're thinking, man, how could they have missed on him the way they did? And, you know, Dave, do you think that's what it was? Do you think it was the durability issue that he had coming in, or was it the six-pack thing meeting with Pete Carroll, or what was it?
He had a pretty severe neck injury, right?
Yeah, injury. Yeah, he almost had to quit football, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he was told by doctors that you should never play football again, or that you won't play football again. So, yeah, that was a big deal. And, you know, I know he was devastated by that, but came back. So, yeah, I mean, that's the reason why he dropped down into the second round.
You know, it's
remember when he got drafted and he was crying?
Oh, like, man.
What took you guys so long?
Yeah, you love that, man. What a great moment. And watching his, we were just talking about workout videos, watching Rashad Penny, and, you know, these guys will isolate different things they're doing well and put it out there on Instagram or whatever. But I've seen a few different videos of him working out, and I know it becomes a cliche at some point about certain guys, but he truly is an athletic freak. And his work ethic seems just absolutely unparalleled. And I love seeing that, you know, a guy who could, you know, get a little arrogant, perhaps a young guy who had a pretty solid rookie season, to say the very least, could sit back and go, I've got this figured out. I know what I'm doing. But you just see these videos of him out there just grinding and working. And
hopping over stuff that looks unhoppable over.
Yes. I mean, he is the walking definition of an athletic freak. His speed, as Dave touched on, his leaping ability, his man, it feels like literally the only thing he has to contend with is just durability, as you touched on in college. Yeah, it was a problem. Maybe it's something he gets past at the pro level, knows how to treat his body differently, how to work differently. We'll find out. But, man, his potential is so exciting. And Pete said they're not going to hold back with him this year, that they know he can do everything now.
He knows exactly who he is. He knows where he's come from. He knows what it's all about. He's not going to let anybody get in the way of him being all he can be. And that's all we could ever ask for. What that is, I don't know. I don't know, you know. But now we know we can move him around. We can ask him to do a lot of different stuff. You know, we were hesitant because he was a young player and all. But we weren't sure if he was able to handle stuff. But we know now he's really a bright football player, and he's got flexibility, and he blocks, and he can rip down the field.
And he seems to have a great attitude, more importantly, at this point. And, you hope that never changes. And we've seen it with receivers before. But right now, he just seems like such a quality guy. His work ethic, again, is off the charts. And is there an area you'd like to see them use him where they didn't last year, whether it's jump balls in the end zone, red zone threat, or crossing patterns, or some area that he just wasn't big on last year you'd like to see him do more often in this season coming up?
Yeah, well, I would say, post him up, you know, and throw the jump ball to him. I'm trying to find his, I'm sure he's got some ridiculous vertical jump as well. But yeah, I mean, he used his body a lot like you see tight ends, except, you know, he's got speed. But you see tight ends, it's always kind of weird. Like, how do these guys have such success? It's not like they're overly huge, and yet they find ways to get open, but it's about using their body. And I think that's something he can improve on. The other thing, too, is ball security. I mean, that was a little bit of a problem last year for him. But, you know, I mean, we never even talked about it because, I mean, he was just out there producing. And he made some great catches, some really, like, Doug Baldwin type of catches. You know, one of them, I think it was in Pittsburgh, where the ball was off, you know. It was actually thrown. I mean, Russell was trying to throw him open, but he was going the other way, and he kind of leaned back and caught it. I mean, he's got great hands, great concentration. But, you know, and I was going to say, I think his dad and his, you know, uncle having that NFL upbringing, that's where a lot of the maturity comes from. You know, his dad, Terrence, played in the league for a while. And, it just, you can see that coming through, that this kid – I think it was the thing I was most impressed by was how he handled media, how he handled interviews, his answers, everything. He's just a very steady guy that, you know, you can count on. You know, that's not going to be a problem for him.
Well, he admits in the offseason he wanted to work on the seven, because he had seven drops this year, the three fumbles that he lost to. He had 100 targets and only 58 catches, so you know that percentage will go up when the drops come down. But he addressed it. He didn't, you know, take offense to it when someone talked to him about it. He goes, yeah, that's something I need to work on. It was 11th most in the NFL in terms of drops. But working on the jugs machine, having tennis balls hucked at him, and then working on one-handed catches. And he's the kind of kid, like you guys have already talked about, who's going to work at that. And I don't think that's going to be anything we're going to be talking about this year.
I love it. The best way to improve is have tennis balls hucked at you.
That's... Yeah, exactly.
just hucking them at you. All right. We'll come back. We'll talk more NFL. The opt-out deadline is officially set for Thursday. There were a couple more additions today. We'll get the latest from the professor. You guys can text in your football questions to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We talked to John Clayton coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.